time being 5:05, I will call this meeting to order. First, thank you all so much for attendance. Just given that we got roll call, I'm just going to do a quick roll call for attendance. Al Charles?
Here.
Aaron Gallagher?
Here.
Dave Callahan here as well. And this meeting is being recorded by Franklin Matters. All right, and first off, just for the committee members, able to take a look at the minutes, and everything look good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, wonderful.
Yep, look good.
Thank you very much. All right, so we're just going to jump right into it. We have a special, Lucas, go right ahead.
If I could just begin, I'm going to be sitting by the computer. I won't be in eyesight, but I'm here, and I just wanted to tee up the conversation of kind of where we're at, and then I'll invite Kate Jessup to share information, if that's okay with you. I'm going to share this with the folks in the room, as well as the folks online.
Very cool.
So, okay. So, just to tee up this conversation and bring people along, you may recall we have been involved, we've been working on a comprehensive school facilities analysis as part of the work from the past and where we've been. So in 2020, you may recall we had closed a school, closed Davis Thayer, had Keller absorb the Davis Thayer students and become a merged community and make Keller Elementary. We then conducted a redistricting analysis last year. The outcome of that analysis was that the scope of the work that was done needed to be broadened and looked at from a larger scope. And the plan was, at the end of the spring, was to conduct, basically we had called it at that time a master schools plan, but an effort to try not to create confusion. It's a comprehensive school facilities plan saying, you know what, we recognize the redistricting, but we probably need to zoom out a little bit more, look at all of our schools, how are we organized, what's the age and educational appropriateness, adequacy of schools, how are we organized and what can we do to make recommendations to think about Franklin not only next year or the year after, but in the longer term as well to set ourselves up. So with that in mind, we've begun this work. What you see up on the screen was part of an update that I provided to everyone, I believe in January or December, I can't recall, where we are focused on three areas. And population enrollment forecasts, we had Dr. McKibben do follow-up to his work. He put together some updated enrollment forecasting. He then presented at your last meeting and shared some of those pieces. One thing that I want to go on record and mention is I have a follow-up call scheduled with Dr. McKibben to look at the enrollment projections. In his, you may recall in the meeting, if you look back, he mentioned he based it on multiple assumptions that all are valid and that we will use. One assumption he made that we need to look a little deeper into is he used 60 houses being built, new houses being constructed each year as part of his assumption. And I've reached out to him because I went down to the planning department. Last year, I believe five houses were constructed. And if you look at over the past 5 years, it's been approximately 60 total. So adding a 60 houses being built every year for the next decade isn't accurate. So I've asked Dr. McKibben to look at that information and either give me a new projected or give me an adjustment that we can make so that we can have better information. At the end of the day, we'll do that. It doesn't stop our progress, but it will just be information. I think we owe it to be as accurate as possible. If we only had five houses newly constructed last year, it's not reasonable to think that we should use 60 each year in the equation. So we're working on that. But beyond that, the enrollment forecast is done. It's there, it's online, you can find it. So here we are. If you move to the right, you have ed visioning and adequacy, and then you have facilities assessment. We're in the ed visioning and adequacy stage. We conducted a portrait of a graduate workshop where we had representative stakeholders from a variety of different areas, including our students, our educators, our leaders, facilities, parents, all a part of Portrait of a Graduate. How is it being applied? Where is it happening successfully? Where are areas where we could focus on for the future? And how can we develop that and make that more build off of our where we are to improve? The second thing we talked about was visioning. Where, I know.
That's hilarious.
Visioning. We've done a 2-day visioning workshop, and the first day was really focused on front-loading information, and kind of trying to build a general shared understanding of the types of visioning and kind of where other schools are, other examples, and kind of working through that. And the second day was really focused on getting some table group discussion. Same representative group that was at Portrait of a Graduate, just different players for the most part. Engaged in the 2 days of visioning. And I thought that was really successful. By the end, we walked out with really good feedback and input from the group that will be incorporated into this big idea. Now, here we are with educational adequacy. So we're joined by Kate Jessup, who is an architect who specializes in learning spaces in education and thinking about that as her work as an architect, but also has a foot in the realm of education and how are buildings being used to support the educational vision and mission of a school district in an effort to try to make sure that they're maximized for student learning and they're meeting the needs and they're supporting the work that's happening in schools. So she's here tonight to share her takeaways from having walked every single building in the district, having toured them, analyzed them, and I think we're going to hear some interesting information about the facts of what we've learned. The last thing I will share is, Kate, I appreciate the approach that she's taken in. We've used the previous report as a foundation, but recognize that previous report had gaps in it that we wanted to look at. One was around specialized programming. One was around just educational adequacy in general, and how can we do it. So I think this builds off of information we had, and it's filling in some information. It's also, the effort here is to try to fill in the information we need so that we can make the most informed decisions moving forward around this work. So without further ado, Kate, I will kick it to you and I can put your presentation
up. Yeah, perfect.
Okay?
Yeah, so just to give people a little understanding of what it is that I sort of specialize in, as an accredited learning environment planner, my work really exists at the intersection of architecture and the educational facility itself. So trying to really understand what the goal is of educators and studying that so that we can understand what the facilities are doing to support or sometimes take away from what your educators are doing. I also want to say that I met dozens of teachers along the way. All the work that I saw happening in the district is phenomenal. The initiatives, the programs. So this is by no means at all about the education that is happening in the buildings. It's really more about how the building is supporting or not supporting the education itself. And that's hard to understand sometimes when you're sort of you're assigning color coding things based on the size. That has nothing to do with, that could be the best educator in that room. The room just might be small, for example. So,
just bear with me, Kate.
No, it's okay.
I'm not used to this. Usually, I can. Let me fix it on my computer.
This is the world of technology and it's the world we live in now. It's great. You can have people who aren't in the room who record things so that the community can understand that it's a silver lining of COVID, I think, made this real. Oh, you're up in the right corner.
Oh. Is that the screen?
Yeah, it looks like. Yep.
Okay. So the question is you're sharing the screen. Al, are you seeing the presentation?
I think if you go to the upper right corner.
The school comprehensive facilities.
Awesome. Yep.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al.
Okay. Do you want me to move ahead?
So this is us, we're here today. Thank you for having me. And I should say, I work for Castle Blues Associates. We're a multidisciplinary architecture firm who has educational planning, interior architecture, landscape architecture, as well as just regular old architecture. So Lucas mentioned, just touching on some of the findings from the 2020 report. On the right, this is pulled directly out of your report. And again, this has nothing to do with the enrollment, because we know that, you know, Keller's now feeling a little bit more full with more kiddos in there, but the 77% that's not factoring in the enrollment at the school. It's really about, there's a number of criteria that were assigned weights. So for example, from a landscape perspective, are your buses in a separate place from where your parents are dropping off in the morning, which is a safety thing. So there was a scores given to assess those sort of factual-based pieces. And that's sort of how your schools, you'll notice that I sort of omitted the one that was the lowest scoring, which is actually the school that was closed, which is great. That's sort of why these numbers provide value. And it's important to note that the ECDC and the high school were not included in this study. But we are including them now, so just we will have some information on those as we move forward. Okay, next stop. So again, very similar to what we just saw, this is a three-legged stool, and these pieces, the demographics, the Ed Vision, and the facilities all go together. You sort of have to consider all three, otherwise the stool will fall down. So far what we've been doing, and it started right after the new year in January, because there was lots of snow on the ground. So I toured with a number of folks, even folks here. We went into each school, so not just the building, the school themselves, to understand how each school was operating and shared buildings independently with the principals, as well as other representatives from the district, to sort of just get a sense. It's important for us to just feel out the schools themselves when we begin this process, to see how they're utilized in action. And so we went on those tours of each of them. So from that, we were able to work with the school principals. They did some markups for us and develop existing building use. So what room is being used as a classroom? What room is being used for special education? What room is being used for multiple student support services, that sort of thing. Again, to get a sense of where you are with how you're using your space and you know, what's working, what's not. Then we developed some plans, which we'll see in a second, and they're really space size comparison plans, very specific to the Massachusetts School Building Authority. They are the kind folks who take a penny of everything you buy for your sales tax and put it into a big bucket of money, and slowly, every you know, decade or so, give you back some of those pennies they've collected. They have a set of space standards by which educational spaces should match. And of course, they work with your vision, so things don't have to exactly align with those. But it's a good indicator of what is up to sort of more current standards versus a lot of buildings built in the 50s and even the turn of the century, you know, long before that, weren't teaching the way that educators are now. So it just gives you a point of reference for a factual comparison. And then again, in the last couple of weeks, we've had the Portrait of a Graduate workshop and the Visioning workshops as well, which help sort of that bottom leg of the stool, the educational vision. So what have we found out? So I might have to stand up here so I can point to things a little bit. I'm not Italian, but you think so, given how much I use my hands. So I did these by typology, the way your typology is now. So you have an early childhood development center for kids 3 to potentially 5, depending on when they're born. It's great. It's a newer building. I think it was 2004. It's in the Oak Street Horseman building. And the way that it's done is, right, it's 7 special education IEP students with 8 typically developing peers, which means that if you have an 8th student in need of the services, you have to make a whole new classroom. And so that has happened in this school already. So, but just a couple of other things that are really interesting about, you know, our codes. And this is actually a lower counter at where you think little ones, but these are really little ones. So you can see that even the facilities themselves are not at the right height. So there's a lot of stools being used in the pre-K. Here, this is the classroom that had to be added because of the students with need. And You have to have a sink in that classroom. So this one is a self-contained sink on wheels. Great way to make it work when you have to. But again, a lot of this is just to show you what is appropriate and what might not be ideal. Give you a sense of some of the challenges your educators are facing day to day. So again, this is just a view into lots of things happening in classrooms. So these rooms are larger by sort of the state. They need their about 1,200 square feet, which yours are. They're the right size, but there's still so much stuff that has to go in there. So this is one of those rooms that would like grow to expand to the size of his tank forever. Okay, we can skip to the next one. So these next two are some of the elementary schools. So again, everyone's doing a great job, so this is not meant to be critical, but you can see here, this is one of the breakout areas in this room. A couple of students are working with a specialist. I don't know if it was math or literacy, something along those lines. But this is a storage closet that's sort of in the center of the hallway. So again, it's space. They've captured it and sort of mined it for what they need to do to deliver those small groups. But it's not the right type of space. Again, you can see this is one of the schools where you can just see, like, when you look at modern facilities, we have breakouts. Oftentimes kids, this was after school, but kids would be sitting with their little bums on the ground in the hallway doing a little bit of group work as they sort of are working in these buildings. But here, there's really nowhere to do that. So you're missing that sort of small group breakout capacity. In this room, you can see there's multiple specialists sharing. So they have the right amount of space. It's just when you share, if I'm having trouble with speech or I'm trying to focus on literacy and there's people doing math next to me, I have trouble focusing. I'm sort of half listening to what they're doing. So again, making it work, the right space, just not always the right appropriate space. And again, here you can see this is a full-size classroom, which is great because you have these spaces, but you have multiple different nooks and crannies that are happening that aren't always ideal for students. Go to the next one. Here you can see in this school you have this itty-bitty little stage, so it's not quite equitable to some of the other schools who have more modern facilities. So it'd be really hard for those students to have like a graduation. So again, just making sure we're sort of taking note of the differences between the schools too when we think about equity. Here, this is a great example of kids where they just sort of pulled out. And this is a newer building, right? This educator had to work with these two kids, and it's we won't share with the fire department that that's that they're working in the hallway, but that's what they need to deliver education, is that separate space, and this is the way they were able to achieve it. And in this school, one of the oldest schools in the district, these are classrooms here that are right off of the gymnasium. The same condition happens at the cafeteria and at the library. The library wouldn't be so bad, right? The younger learners are in that area. But if you're in third grade and you're trying to focus on something and someone's smashing dodgeballs against the gym walls, you're gonna hear that. And same, if you can imagine the shrieks that occur during the lunch break, if you're not in that lunch wave, you know, it's gonna be hard to focus in those classrooms. As we move into the middle schools, just a variety again, this is sort of a shared specialist area of two teachers. You can see they're longing for natural light as they put a poster of a view on the back wall, but you know, even adults need windows. And you know, you can see that obviously if this person was in here working and this person's working with students, they're gonna be distracting each other as well. It's not, you know, we have to make sure we're providing appropriate space for both adults and students. In this one, you have one of the schools that, as a former middle school or high school, it has an auditorium. That's great, but as I pointed out earlier in the week, you can see those beautiful dust bunnies coming out of the ventilation system. You know, it's just dated, so I'm sure that there's some upgrades that could happen there. But it's a great thing to have, right? It's just, again, only in one of the facilities, so not an equitable experience for everyone. This is one of the science rooms. It's great to have those that lab capability. It's really important in middle school that you start to get that, where students are losing their engagement at middle school age, to keep them in those things. But you can just see that these are old and dated. This is where you'd be going out to like IKEA going, I just need new cabinets. You can see that the furniture, although it's a little bit different in height, it's all the same. So you're providing that same experience to every kid, even though I'm 5'8 and you're probably 6'3", right? You know, that we don't necessarily fit in the same size chair the same way. And this room used to be a tech or a computer lab, which is now music, and so I can only imagine how the sound of those string instruments bounces all over the place and isn't giving them the right way of experiencing music in a dedicated space which has sound absorption. So the next one. The high school, again, it's a new building, so it's a great shape. There's nothing really wrong with it, but when we think about education 10 years ago, it's not being delivered necessarily exactly the same way. So here you can see the large scale cafeteria, one experience for nearly 2,000 kids. There are a lot of kids in high school who have social emotional challenges and really are looking for that other option for eating. You do have it for the seniors because this is too small of a space, so they're eating in the library. Not ideal, but you know that actually is better for some kids who are needing that social emotional support in a different space. So again, a lot of modern designs in schools are looking at different variety. So being able to take, this was the teacher eating area. This would have been great to turn into that alternate seating area, but actually you needed to turn it into space for the kitchen staff themselves to work. So just noting that. This again was a specially designed classroom with these fun wing walls, but the teacher can't see this student back here, so there is a little bit of a supervision issue, and it's a balance of designing something to be flexible but specific. You know, how do you do that to make sure that you're meeting the needs of whatever this room could be used at in the future? And then this is like your diamond in the rough, the space which is where you're doing stagecraft. It's really operating a lot like a makerspace or a high-tech fab lab type of space. And so looking to bring in, when you're thinking about what the types of programs that get these kids really excited, you know, this types of room, it's tools all over the place, all different wonky things going on in there. That's the type of programs and spaces that kids really latch onto. That's sort of my walk through the schools. Now let's go into quickly the sort of factual information about the buildings themselves. So for each, and I only have one plan for each because I didn't want to bore you too much to death, just to show you the background. We obviously have every plan of all the schools, and we can provide that background. So if you wanted to see what was on the basement level on the third floor, that sort of thing, we have that information, and I only brought one plan today. Save your sanity. And then for each, we also have a site plan showing the parcels themselves, where we have wetlands, for example, here at the Keller Sullivan building, just to give you a sense of where there might be opportunities. We did talk a lot about outdoor connections as we walk the buildings themselves. Okay, so this is specific to the Keller School, and it's really hard to see from where you are, so we will certainly have to share these out, but there is cross-hatching on this portion of the building, despite what it may look like. So you can see the rooms here are utilized for the Keller School on the left-hand side. The way that this building was designed is this was the elementary portion of the building, and this is the middle school. This is three levels, this is two levels. There's sort of shared office space in the middle, the media center at the heart of the building, the cafeteria and music in the front. What you're looking at on the right, and this will be the same for each school plan, is the spaces that are green are basically, as compared to the MSBA standards, they are 20% under to 10% over, which means they're kind of right on the money for the size. So you can see in this building, really, you have sort of your health rooms and some of your music rooms are a little undersized because the pink is 20% or more less than the standard. So the spaces that are pink are going to be the ones that are pretty small. Green is good, and blue means actually like these are even bigger than the MSBA would do, which is not often you find those. So you can see in this building, spaces are pretty much right on the money for sizes, which is a great thing for us to find. So the, you know, when you think about how they compare, you're in good shape in this building. Moving on to the Sullivan building, it's sort of the opposite. So now we're on this portion of the building here. There are a couple things to note where like these spaces in gray here are being used by the elementary school just because of the large population there and the smaller population in the middle school. So those are not as legible here, but those are like dark gray, and that's really to show that it's not the appropriate location for those rooms. The kids do love it because they get to go to the middle school when they're in elementary school where they're, well, this is orchestra. So, I mean, it may be great, but again, is that truly appropriate? You know, they should just go for walks over there if they want to, you know, sort of go around. Because if these spaces are a little undersized, because these were designed as classrooms and they're being used as more tech-based spaces now, so that's why they're shown in red. They would be green if they were used as classrooms. So again, the building itself is pretty much in alignment with all the state standards for sizes, which is great. For this building, you can see, obviously, there's a grate. Okay, so we made sure to show both buildings here. You're sort of hamstrung by some wetlands. I mean, every school in America is built on either a wetland or a dump, so you're probably going to find it everywhere. But here, this is the ECDC portion of the building, the Horace Mann portion and the Oak Street portion on that main drag there. So as we move in, because this building was older and has had some pretty robust renovations, it's in good shape, but it also has some smaller spaces. So on the Oak Street side, a lot of the classroom spaces are actually pretty spot on. There are a few oversized spaces, but you can see like music, special education rooms, those are undersized. And again, this is all one program here, the REACH program, so if we put them all together, it would probably be right on, but because they're three separate rooms, they weren't meant to be, like, the rooms themselves were independent, so that's why you're seeing those in red. And obviously, the cafeteria is undersized. The other thing to note here is these little ones have to go all the way up to their gym up there. Makes sense that it's up there, but again, this is the best use of educational time. The Horace Mann portion of the building, again, the sort of north portion of the plan. You do have, obviously, this is where we have the auditorium in that building, which is a great location. You can see these rooms are a little smaller. The science rooms really were classrooms that were turned into science rooms, so they don't meet the National Science Safety Standards, so they are very undersized compared to those. So if you were really, you know, doing some pretty exciting hands-on science work, you know, those rooms are very tight. They're not laboratories. Obviously, the same thing with cafeteria. These classrooms, this ring here is all sort of undersized as we think about that.
We should have torn it down.
ECDC, again, this is great. Everything is right on the money. With the exception of the appropriateness, as you can see now in the dark gray, which looks visible, is, you know, these students who are in this classroom, the classroom itself is 1,600 square feet, so it's the biggest classroom, basically, you have in your district, but these little ones have to sort of go past the middle schoolers to get into that room, and there's a garage door in it because it was repurposed from a tech space when it was a high school, so not ideal. It's making it work. It's great. They have a cool name for it, right? The Rainbow Room.
Butterfly
Room. But, you know, that's much further away from their peers, so there's less collaboration between those teachers, etc. Next, we go to the Jefferson Remington, which is honestly driving up, probably the most beautiful sighted school I've ever been to. It's like, this is beautiful. I just want to take a walk here. Too bad I get arrested. So here you've got these beautiful walkways, great separation of the drop-offs and the two different school entries. They're sort of very clearly defined and separated on either side here. But again, more wetlands, of course. So on this one, on the elementary school side, the elementary school being on this edge here, with some of these spaces up here, the classrooms themselves, really great sized. What is undersized is your music, you know, the cafeteria space. So again, it's those support spaces that are really problematic. And I have to be honest, this is a great problem to have because most of the time it's all the classrooms that are undersized when we walk into a district. So it was lovely to find that these were all the, you know, on the space standards or better. As we move into the Remington portion of the building, these are a little smaller, and again, it kind of has to do with
this national science standards on this edge here. The classrooms are a little small. They're not hugely small. They're just a little smaller on this edge compared to the standards. And when these were built, those standards were probably not considered. So it's not that anyone designed anything that wasn't aligned. They may not have existed yet. So here you've got some, these were probably two rooms that were combined at one point to make a much larger space here. We move to the next one. We have our standalone elementary school. So actually no wetlands, surprise. Small site though, 10 and 15 acres, and a lot of it obviously being hyper wooded. And it's really residential in feel. This one, and just to orient you, sort of the main entrance is right here. This is your modulars, which are only half used now and will be coming down next year. So we did put them in there, but that's good to know that because those are beyond their useful life. That's sort of the term we use. So these are those spaces where you can see this is the gym, the CAF, and the media center where those classrooms are directly connected. The other thing that's a challenge in this building is you can, from the camera, they can see you, but once you're buzzed in, I could run anywhere in the building, and unless you were as fast as me, I could be up and running. So just as from a safety standpoint, something that certainly in this day and age, we need to just consider. So again, the classrooms themselves, it was a surprise that a building of this vintage, but they're good-sized classrooms. The interior finishes and like are dated because the building is like 70 years old. When you have this is a kindergarten room, and this is your technology room, health and music, those are undersized. So again, it's those support spaces. Plenty of districts don't have rooms for those at all. They're on a cart. So again, where we applaud that you have them, I think the commitment to that is fantastic. And the last one, Parmenter. So big wetland down the hill here. So the building is sort of situated right on the portion of the site that's buildable. On the top, you can see sort of classrooms. Again, in a lot of these classrooms, when education was very different in the 60s, you're sort of reallocating it. So this art room obviously is undersized because it's a former classroom. I believe one of these rooms over here was the library at one point. Now it's a classroom, which means that if it was a library, it was really too small. The cafeteria, gymnasium, and basically you can see almost every classroom is pretty significantly undersized in this building. This, I just want to say, was a gift from one of your students. When I was touring through, I was in a special education room, and I framed it, and it's on my desk now, to remind us when things get tough, why we do what we do. So educational adequacy observations, it's really appropriateness, right, is really what we should be calling it. So you'll see that change moving forward. Just some big high-level ideas to take away. With all of that information and data can be overwhelming. The spaces in your newer buildings is great. It's online with the state standards, and so that should be a breath of fresh air or a relief. The small group and breakout space is not ideal throughout the entire district. No one school in particular, but as we have seen, that education really is moving to that more personalized and really working with smaller groups away from teacher-directed and teacher-facilitator type of model. Not having those spaces will become more challenging to your educators. As I mentioned, when we were looking at the Kennedy School, the older buildings are not totally aligned with safety standards and accessibility. They do have things like lifts, but if I'm in a wheelchair at certain schools, I have to have a totally different experience to get to where I need to go, which is very common in any aged building. A lot of our state and municipal buildings are that way when they're renovated. But you know, it's our charge as designers to make sure that every kid, whether they're in a wheelchair, they have sight limitations, et cetera, have the same experience in a building. So I just want to point that out. The outdoor learning spaces could be improved throughout. This is always hard to sort of articulate because they need a champion, right? You tend to get one school which will have this like great educator who just loves gardening, and then you get gardens at the school. So there's an opportunity because you have so much great sight around all of your buildings to maybe think about ties to the community. curriculum and ways that you can, if that teacher leaves, that you can keep the gardening going and using it as sort of the learning. It's also been proven to be really great at foreign language, because, you know, when we use foreign language from high school nowadays, it's usually grocery store items that we're trying to remember when we travel. The declining enrollment provides great opportunities for space mining. So where your population is coming down, that means that classrooms have become available in the last however many years. So that's where why you do have those specialists sharing a full-size classroom. It's because they have that space. So that is a positive thing when we think about, do we need to maybe think about how appropriate it is? Sure, but the space is there. So in fact, you probably have too much space for what you need. Commitment to providing dedicated space for special programs throughout the district. When we talked about those undersized tech rooms, the undersized art rooms, again, just important to note that you have them. So the students are going into immersive rooms. Should they be a little bigger? Yeah. But ultimately, having that commitment to get dedication at basically every single one of your schools is a really positive thing that we took note of. And then the last one is dedicated special education space not designed to be reflective of the population. This is difficult because year to year, educators have to make tough choices of how many, I've got an extra third grade this year, so this room was Strive, but next year I've got to make it my extra third grade, right? That is a rule of the game of, you know, moving year to year. The challenge with that is that that special ed room is never designed for the population within it. So if you can imagine, a lot of evidence suggests that students with autism are more successful when certain things are personalized, when certain, you know, within the room things are broken down a little bit. So there are things like portable walls that are used. There's great sort of hacks that educators have to make these things happen. But obviously having something where it was like, this is going to be a classroom for severe and profound learners, multiple disabilities, or autism, or cognitive disabilities, and really designing to support those students is obviously going to rise the tide for all of them. So just noting that it's not uncommon, it's in fact pretty much how everyone operates year to year, but just you may want to consider in the grand scheme of things when and if any changes occur, how those are reflected in your special education population to really support those learners. Next steps. So what are we gonna be doing over the next couple of weeks? There's a little bit of discussion about some follow-ups with some of our visioning is making sure that we heard those people right. This is Franklin's vision, so those people in the room has sort of charted a path, and we need to make sure that we heard it correctly. So working a little bit on that. March and April, we'll be developing some options, and that's really based on all those other legs of the stool we talked about. There will be some workshops with students, parents, leadership throughout the next couple of months. Really, we want to make sure people are understand what was discussed, who discussed it, sort of get feedback from them, create a dialogue about what may happen. And then we also have a number of meetings for the Portrait of a Graduate and the Visioning, which are coming up in the next couple of weeks, I think. And then the Master Planning Report out is sort of end of April, May. Obviously, that's a little TBD depending on, you know, how much, you know, feedback we have with the community, you know, whether or not people are, you know, moving in that direction. But it's because it's a, this type of effort is supporting 10, 20, 30 years down the road. A lot of people talk about 10 years, but 10 years is one project in my lifespan. So we need to make sure that when we're thinking about how to address the district, we're recognizing that it's more than just a 10-year process. And you have to have short, medium, and long-term goals to get there to make sure, you know, you're addressing the needs of every learner from today for the next 30 years. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great cat ice cream. I loved it.
start. Thank you so much for this, facilitating all the workshops that we had as well. And one of the things too, just for everybody who committed their time to those workshops, you know, that are there in this room. I know that I see a couple of faces on names online as well. So,
but yes.
This is fantastic. Really appreciate all this. Let's see. Okay. All right. One of the things that I was just interested in, that outdoor learning, mm-hmm. you know, so kind of besides like the garden idea, what else, like what else have you might have seen in other districts?
Sure. Oh boy. I wish my landscape architecture team was here with me. There are so many different ways to do outdoor learning. There is the outdoor classroom, which I think is probably the least effective way, depending on who you ask, I guess. But there's also many other ways for students to engage in the outdoors. So it was mentioned to me that there are some walking trails at some of the schools. I fondly remember being in elementary school and learning about the processes of flowers, etc. You know, pollination and raising butterflies and being outside and engaging with the environment. So that type of outdoor learning, there's sort of more hands-on play, adventure play, some call it, where kids learn how to do dangerous things safely, which is an important part of your earliest learners. There's formalized outdoor performance areas like amphitheaters, which allow drama groups and different theater clubs to go outside. I think, again, that's one of the positives to come out of COVID is people did embrace it. And as you look to what do we want to be doing in a long time and what your you know residents and community members said in the visioning, there is this sort of drive for authenticity, deep dives, and that sort of project-based activities, and you know that's where connecting to the outside is really has so many opportunities, and it can be anything you want it to be. Really, possibilities are endless.
It's also because I don't really, you know, when we talk about like the portrait of a graduate, that aspect of like the creative you know learners. As soon as when I was in on talking about on Monday, that was one of the first things that kind of jumped out at me, especially for the little ones, being outside and just kind of like learning in the dirt.
Just to add to that, during the walks, the courtyards were considered as part of outdoor learning as well. So there are schools that have a courtyard that's self-contained within a school area, and those were also a part of it. So when you think outdoor, don't just think the woods, but think about those spaces and how could those be designed in a way that allows easy, safe access to the internal section of a school, and how could those be designed purposefully for the use of all kids. All teachers.
Thanks. Okay. Yep. And then maybe to piggyback on that, whomever, do those get utilized frequently, those courtyards, besides, for?
I think it varies. Yeah. Obviously seasonal. We're in New England, right?
Yeah.
But with nice weather, I think it varies, but I wonder about if they were just, you know, the idea of if the space is designed and conducive to learning, would more people access? Because each courtyard's a little bit different, depending on when it was. Yeah. What it was purposefully made for, how it's set up now. If there's no furniture, some of them are just open. Some of them have structures. So it all depends on the school and the usage, but I think that was just a point that was brought up on a few I'm thinking of in my head.
My impression on the Keller tour was that they're not really utilizing it right now. The
Correct.
Place structure's kind of been outgrown.
Right.
They're not really out there at the moment.
Correct. However, I've gotten an email since then that she has all sorts of ideas.
Oh.
And, and you know, wants to reconceptualize, could it be a project-based learning area? Instead of just having, because there are doors directly from the kindergarten that go out, and that's why it was designed as a kindergarten play area. But could instead, and there's doors to the rest of the school, could it be where a third and fourth grade come together to drop eggs off of the roof or whatever it may be? You know, to keep the kids engaged, and I think there's the desire there. So I think a lot of it also has to do with, I want to do something, but I don't know how or what. So I think I would be happy to bring our landscape architect team, Luke McCoy. He's working with the state of Rhode Island right now. Every school has a different
thing they want to do. So trying to understand, and there's definitely ideas and examples that he would be happy to share with you folks.
Can I just build on that and want just minor? There's certainly opportunities for growth in how we utilize those spaces and how they're, you know, we revision them. But what I will say is just yesterday at the high school, I was with an art teacher, and she was talking about how she's got direct access to the courtyard and how she uses the courtyard with her class. So again,
it's happening.
It's and just the fact, I think it was brought up in here, just the light that it brings to all the classrooms throughout the building. So they are being used similarly at Horace Mann and Oak. The STEM classroom has access, or maybe they have to walk around, I can't recall, but they do utilize that space more than others. Again, certainly opportunities to increase the way that we use these spaces and design them, but I do think they are being accessed in some ways. Yeah.
Your bravest teachers.
Yes.
Because like you said, so much of it is just dependent upon having that education, that champion who says, I want to go and I want to do this. I have the access, you know, physically, and I have that initiative or idea.
We may find through focus groups too, as we talk to different constituents, that educators have some ideas that they share with us during those times to talk through what are thoughts or what are ways in which we can improve those specific spaces. So.
Okay, thank you very much.
So I know you mentioned the need for, as like, you know, oh, we have an extra kindergarten classroom or first grade classroom this year. We need to swap spaces around to make that happen. Are there kind of ways in which you've seen that change happen most effectively? Obviously, it's hard to plan for year to year that you're going to need to be swapping around how you divvy up the classrooms.
So it's hard to describe how it would happen in, because the way it happens is the way it happens.
Right.
You know, but, you know, if we were planning a new building, just as an example, in District X, often they may have a flex classroom, which, like if it's a four-section school, every once in a while you get a fifth classroom.
Right.
You build in five, and most years that is your science, STEM, even at elementary level type of classroom where, you know, they go in and it's an immersive environment. Teachers can sort of sign it out and go in there. Mm-hmm. But when you need it as a classroom, it's a classroom.
Right.
So that you're not overtaking those special education rooms or other spaces in general. So you don't have art in a cart one year because the art room needs to be a whatever room.
Yeah.
And then I was curious, just in regards to the Kennedy, the modules. So first, just want to confirm, I know there was a lot of cuts with capital, but that money is still there, it's still projected to receive it, and then to work to remove those modules from Kennedy, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then just from your perspective, what's the take of the verdict on modules right now? I know the ones at Kennedy had been there for a while, and I think it's a, you know.
Yeah, they're sort of like they have a lifespan, and yours are past that.
98, 99.
When you have the challenge with modulars in general is they serve a need, and that need is, oh my goodness, we need extra classrooms, we need them right away, and hopefully it's a short-term sort of solution. The challenge becomes that when you add classrooms to a building, you're adding population, which means you need a bigger cafeteria, you're more kids, you need a bigger gym, you need a bigger, more maybe another art room to support students. And in 99% of cases, that doesn't occur. So you essentially overtax the core spaces of a building by adding more children to use those spaces. They certainly have a great purpose. You know, when that's the solution, is like, we got a bubble, like when the COVID babies come, you know, a couple of years, there may be bubbles of, you know, nationally where there's extra classrooms and everyone's frantic. So there's a certainly a place in the world for a modular. You know, sometimes they're great because they have air conditioning and the rest of the building doesn't. People love them. So they're great. It's just not a long-term planning solution because they are not long-term solutions.
They're on piers. So it's open underneath them except for the concrete piers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They do have permanent modulars, yeah, which lasts longer, but right. It's not a critter life.
The other piece is they were inspected a few years ago. We had recommendations, but it was through the town carpenter who was able to mitigate and extend the life as long as we have. But I can remember there was a recommendation a few years ago to pull those down. We addressed it, but there were concerns even years ago on the framing and the rot towards the framing. And we've really extended the life to the capacity.
You've got every dollar's worth.
I think we have, but I think at this point it's going to be beyond a recommendation to keep them safely. And if we can't have that, it's a liability, and that's not something that we want to be involved with either. So, Al, do you want to speak, or do you want us to read your chat?
Might not be able to.
Please read.
Okay. So he's wrote, he is not sure how it is part of this meeting. Are there recommendations on the changes the district should make?
So I don't have recommendations. Yeah.
Do you mean recommendations to the changes that were cited through the, like the walkthrough on space, or? Because the larger idea is, I think, the timeline of master planning, mm-hmm. recommendations, like big picture, are going to come after you have a master plan for the big idea, but are you which would include recommendations on. But this was about trying to share out the ed adequacy and the walkthroughs and what Kate has learned and the types of information she's collecting as part of that report, so that we're breaking it down. So that's why we did the enrollment demographic report out last month. This month is on this focus. There'll be more information on facilities in general. So I think we're trying to build it out. So I just would want to know for specifics. And
we don't, at this point, this is sort of like, literally we're like laid the foundation, right? So this is all sort of fact finding, where we layer on the vision and we take sort of, when we think about the building stock, you have a number of buildings which we just looked at are in great physical shape. Certainly every building needs, just like we go to the doctor every year, a building right. needs capital dollars that feed it and keep it healthy. But ultimately, the recommendations would come once we, you know, understand from folks like yourselves, from the visioning groups, other community leaders, district leaders, you know, and weigh in on some of the things we've heard to help sort of chart the path. And then we would provide some options, recommendations based on all of that. So we're not there yet, but we're excited. This is really the super fun part where we get to talk about big picture pie in the sky education, and it's great. For these folks back here.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Al.
And would you also just elaborate on the difference of ed adequacy versus ed educational appropriateness?
Sure. So the adequacy is really more of a numbers, an assessment of do your kindergarten rooms have toilets? Do your, what is the condition of this? And it was really quantitative. And, and that set the baseline of, is it adequate, right? Is there the bus and the parents' circulation, separation? Is there a safe, secure entry? Sort of like the facts of the building. What we've layered on in this sort of ed appropriateness is those things, right? You have your gymnasium, but the tiniest little legs have to walk a very far distance to get there. Is that when you think about, okay, in the long term, is that the appropriate location? You do have the right amount of space, more than enough space. Are those spaces in the right places? Are they serving the needs of the educators within them? That's really where we are talking appropriate, not adequate. If you you know, in all of your schools, there is dedicated space for all of these folks, right? There's, you don't get that sort of sob story of the person in the broom closet, the janitor's closet hiding. You know, your educators have space in the building that is not a janitor's closet to teach small groups. It's still not necessarily the most appropriate space.
Okay.
So that's sort of the difference. Adequate, yes, you have it, check the box, but appropriate is sort of that qualitative piece.
Okay, perfect, thank you. And you said that, kind of moving forward, that like with the report, it's all, it's gonna be about educational appropriateness.
Yeah, it's sort of, it's both, because okay. The adequacy sort of informs the appropriateness. But I think moving forward, we'll use the terminology appropriateness because it's a little more reflective of the qualitative you know, things that we've learned since then.
Okay.
And in that first slide, or one of the first slides, that had the percentages for each of the school buildings, will there kind of be you know, a way, like a reflection of how they got those points to get to, like, what areas were kind of causing them to rank in various?
So if you go through the 2020 report, each item, category of each item is broken down and there's a score.
Okay.
So I went through them. This was a peer of mine who did the initial study 3 years ago. I went through and found that I was in alignment with the scores. Okay. And it's sort of a, there's no like a three would be if it's missing this. It's sort of still like, you know, it's good. It's sort of like good, better, best type of thing in the way that we scored them. But I found them to be reflective of the sort of conditions that they were assessed. I'm happy to, if you want to take a look at that and email me with any questions specifically about them. Craig and I could both get together and answer any specific questions you have.
And I just had one question too about ECDC. Because I know just since I've kind of gotten on board, we've just seen those numbers just continue to grow and grow and grow. What's the capacity? Like, at what point, you know, I know for a while it's kind of been busting at the seams. Like, at what point do we get too many of those extra?
We are at capacity.
We're at capacity.
Yeah. We can't go any, can't go any further. We have to either, we'll have to think of other options if we have more students.
Yeah, and so what, yeah, so say, you know, like say tomorrow, family moves in, has a student, yeah, please.
I can speak to that. So what we'll have to do, if we're at capacity and we can't physically fit any more students there, that we need to think about, does the program, if you can't fit the entire program in one space, you have to start to explore options that have it on two spaces or multiple. And at the same time, one thing that I'm committed to is, after the process we went through last year, where we dug pretty deep into the redistricting and whatnot, what I learned and what I think the sentiment of the group that voted to not make that change was, hey, we need more information and we need to look at this big picture. So everything that's being looked at right now is being looked at across all 10 schools and how we're utilizing all of our space to serve the needs of all of our kids. So I think it's not just about trying to solve one part, but the reason I bring that up is the ECDC population is one aspect we have to consider in any decision we make moving forward, because it would be very short-sighted to not think about that and make other decisions and then put us in a situation where we're still at capacity or growing and we have no other space. So we have to divest ourselves from kind of how we're organized and look at it holistically across the board and see what makes the most sense. How should we be organized as a district to best meet the needs of our students educationally, and then utilizing the space we have within the district to make that happen. So it's part of the conversation, which is why we walk through every space. That's why we visited every specialized program, ECDC, every classroom, and tried to really look at this. Went to the high school, our newest building, to just get a sense of kind of all the spaces and kind of how they're used. So is that pretty accurate, Mrs. Morano, as far as that goes?
Yep.
Awesome. In which I thank you very much, and I truly, really appreciate all like the walkthroughs of every single space, because I know, especially when we look at those specialized rooms, I know like they were, a few of them you said like were listed as like that pinkish red.
Mm-hmm.
But purposefully. And I know that, you know, that was one of the things that kind of came out previously, was that one room really can't fit 25 students if it's in the REACH program, but as we kind of saw, like, with the joint budget, that's a significant savings, you know, for the community by kind of having a lot of those programs, plus that just that amazing, they're invited to the birthday parties, so that's one. Okay, perfect. Thank you very much for that.
Al, at the drop-off.
Okay.
Can we answer this question?
Yeah, no, and that was fantastic. I really appreciate his time as well. I know this had to get rescheduled as well because of the joint budget, so. Any other kind of questions? Just around the table.
All right, I don't have questions. I just would like to just reiterate, I know some people joined the call as I started, just to kind of, I pulled up this slide. This was from our December meeting when I provided the update, but we did the population enrollment forecast, as you know, conducted that. Dr. McKibben presented last meeting, provided information about enrollment, kind of that report is available online. You can also see that we're making some. I have a call to Dr. McKibben to look at the new construction number. It's projected at 60, but we need to look at that in context of what we're experiencing in Franklin, which is around 5 to 7 new houses constructed per year versus 60. So one of his assumptions out of many is one that he's looking at for us, and there's some shared agreement on what that might be. The second piece is we did a 2-day workshop for visioning, and we did a 1-day workshop for a portrait of a graduate application, which all tie into how is the vision going to be impacting the use of school. And I think today's focus was around educational appropriateness, adequacy, and to hear from Kate Jessup, an educational architect, on how we're utilizing space. And I appreciate how you couched it on, this isn't about if a teacher's doing a great job professionally, but it's almost like you're looking at this from this space used for this purpose could be better served this way, or it's perfect the way it's being used, or whatnot, and comparing it also to MSBA guidelines to do an actual mathematical comparison on room size and how it fits. So I think those were important for us as we keep building our understanding and our shared understanding as a community on where we're at. So next steps, as you heard, are to look at getting some engagement with focus groups. So that includes teachers, educators, families, to try to get some information out there on what came out of the visioning sessions, this work around ed appropriateness and adequacy, to try to build, to get more input and try to help us get to a place where we have a full picture of the district from all aspects related to these three buckets. In facilities assessment, it's looking at the school buildings, and I know the facilities department, we're joined by Mike D'Angelo and Kevin Horn, our facilities director and assistant director, deputy director, who are helping to map out, and they have already have a long-range plan for each building, what the needs are related to those, both mechanically, right?
And structurally,
thank you. So I think these are all parts of the pieces as we as a community need to look at as a district, to look at what do we need to do to be successful tomorrow, in a year from now, short term and then long term, and to set ourselves up so that we can make the most informed decisions and hopefully put some decisions out there with recommendations from a master plan that, you know, there may be things in there that you agree with or don't, but we'll have that to help guide us and help you all and make some decisions on what we need to do for the district.
That's perfect. All right, thank you very much. All right, and then so unless there's any other questions or comments, ready here?
Just technical, the presentation will be posted to the school place so I can share it out. I do have photos, but I want to make sure we get them.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely.
I would love all of those maps as well.
Yes, I've shared most of them. We've also have meeting minutes from all of the interviews, just sharing what was discussed. It certainly was not inclusive of everything that the school is doing, just, you know, sort of, you know, within like an hour and during our walk, we talked about some of the challenges, some of the special highlights of each school. So there's minutes of those that have also been reviewed by the principals themselves and are sort of ready. Mm-hmm. So I can put those together in a package and send them all out so you can
dig a little deeper into and see the appropriate colors on everything. So
that'll be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you.
All right.
We'll be back in a few weeks to talk about the workshops as well.
Right. Oh, excellent. Thank you very much. And so, seeing no other questions or comments, entertain a motion to adjourn. I will second that. No more need for roll call. All those in favor?
Yes.
Opposed? Thank you all so much.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.